The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
According to the American Cancer Society, about 1 in 8 women will develop invasive breast cancer over the course of their lifetime. In 2015, an estimated nearly 232,000 women had cases of breast cancer. Joining me on the program is Dr. David Bush. He's chairman of the Department of Radiation at Loma Linda University Medical Center. Doctor, those are some big statistics. It seems like next to things like lung cancer, breast cancer and prostate cancer seem to be the two big cancers that affect men and women. What can you tell us about this? And is there any hope in terms of reducing those numbers or perhaps learning more about the cause?
Sure. Well, those are the two most commonly diagnosed cancers by gender, and that's largely due to the incidence of those two being high, as well as there being well-established screening programs to detect cancer in an early stage for both breast and prostate cancer. So we end up treating a lot of these patients and leading to the large numbers that you mentioned.
Now, one theory is that, at least when it comes to breast cancer with women, that a lot of this was as a result of hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, and as that has been reduced, there's been less incidence of cancer. Is there any truth to that research, or have you found anything that supports that?
Yeah, perhaps a partial truth. You know, like most cancers, breast cancer is quite complex in terms of its etiology. There isn't just one thing that causes it. There are a number of things, diet, lifestyle, genetic predisposition, hormone exposure, and many other things that can lead to it. So correcting one of them is likely to make a small improvement, but by itself won't solve the problem.
Now, I know in the past, typical treatments for diagnosis of breast cancer has been surgery followed by either chemotherapy or radiation. We have a client right now. She went through surgery and is being treated with chemotherapy. What are the different protocols for the treatment of breast cancer?
It's quite standard to start with surgery in most cases. There are occasions when the disease is more progressed where they may elect to initiate chemotherapy before surgery. But the sequence you mentioned is still quite standard for most cases, surgery followed by systemic therapy if needed, and then radiotherapy to the breast or chest wall. And of course, there are variations in that depending on the findings at the time of surgery and the type of tumor. So that's a standard procedure that you mentioned.
Now, your treatment at Loma Linda is somewhat different. Usually, you would begin treatment, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, you would begin through proton beam radiation therapy rather than going directly to, let's say, surgery first.
No, that's not quite so. In the population that we've treated, still initiated with surgery where they did at least a local excision of the tumor. So, you know, it really has not replaced the need for surgery. That's still believed to be a needed and valuable initial treatment. That's where the diagnosis gets established. We find out details on how large the tumor is, how aggressive it might be. Often we find out if there's extension into lymph nodes. You know, each one of these factors kind of need to be known prior to delivering additional treatment with radiation or chemo, because those findings will affect the decisions that are made for subsequent treatment. So in what we have done at our center with proton beam, still included surgery as the first step.
Why the difference with breast cancer versus prostate cancer? Because I know at Loma Linda, proton beam radiation is a protocol used to replace surgery. In other words, if you treat somebody with proton beam therapy for, let's say, prostate cancer, usually the individual does not have to have surgery prior to that. Why the difference with breast cancer?
Yeah, right. So that is a big difference. And you're right. In the case of prostate cancer, there are kind of choices of initial treatment. As you mentioned, either surgery or radiation seem to be equally effective at eradicating the disease. So in that disease, there's a choice between the two, and usually you're not doing both. In fact, you try to avoid doing both. In the case of breast cancer, however, radiation really has not been shown to be a replacement for surgery, meaning that outcomes are better if surgery is a part of the treatment plan. And that's, of course, the case for lots of other cancers, and it's still the case for breast cancer as well. And I think it's because I think one important difference, if we kind of compare breast to prostate, is kind of the ease of removal of the tumor, right? So if you have a small tumor in the breast, they're actually quite easily and readily removed without a lot of side effects or toxicity associated with it. The case with prostate cancer is quite different because the prostate's kind of buried in the middle of your body. It is technically difficult to remove, so there can be a fair number of complications that follow that kind of surgery. So I don't know that anyone's really in a big rush to eliminate surgery for breast cancer because it's a reasonably easy, simple thing to do.
What is the advantage of proton beam radiation when it comes to breast cancer? Let's say it begins with surgery, and then afterwards there's either general radiation and chemotherapy, or maybe a combination of both, to arrest the disease and to basically eliminate the risk of that disease returning. Where does, let's say, proton beam radiation distinguish itself from the other forms or treatments, and what has been the success rate?
The role of proton beam in breast cancer, I mean, this is still something that is still developing for sure, but the role of proton radiation compared to standard radiation is almost always in avoidance of normal tissue, meaning we always want to radiate the part of the body that needs to be radiated and little or none of the healthy tissue around it. And that's what proton beam allows. That is basically always better than standard radiation with X-ray type treatment. So in the case of breast cancer, you know, when we're radiating the breast, kind of the structures and organs that are nearby that need to be paid attention to, you know, one is the breast tissue itself. We know that the more breast tissue that gets radiated, it seems to lead to worse cosmetic results, which is one of the goals of treatment, is to try to leave the patient with a body that is unchanged. Secondly, you know, tissues deep to the breast, the chest wall and ribs, lung tissue, and for tumors on the left side, the heart, each one of those organs and structures can be negatively affected by radiation, by causing things like scarring of the lung, fractures of the ribs, or even coronary artery disease. And of course, none of those structures really need to be radiated. They just kind of get in the way. And we find that when we do treatment with proton beam, we can nicely avoid each of those things. So that's why we use it. That's why we like it. And we've got some data now that supports its use.
Now, is this a relatively new form of treatment? I know Loma Linda has been treating prostate cancer and other forms of cancer for decades now, and proton beam radiation was invented at Loma Linda. But is it, in terms of its application to breast cancer, is this something new that you've initiated recently, or have you been treating breast cancer for some time now?
When we started treating breast cancer, that was back in 2004, and that was done on a research trial, a clinical trial that was initiated back then. So we've been doing it since that time. We've completed the original trial that included 100 subjects and then began a second trial that enrolled an additional 150 subjects. That's also completed. And based on the results that we've got, we've been offering that treatment as standard treatment today. So that's kind of how it's gone in breast cancer. I believe that we were the kind of first center to begin using it in breast cancer. But of course, proton therapy predates the 2004 date by quite a bit. You know, back to even to the 1950s, I believe, is when people began doing such things.
Now, I know proton beam, it's been used for tumors of the brain, even liver cancer. Are you finding this treatment protocol applies across, let's say, a wider spectrum of cancers today? In other words, you're finding more uses of proton beam to fight cancer as a therapy.
Sure, you're right. No question. As you can imagine, the rationale for using it in breast cancer, you know, in terms of avoiding healthy tissues, you know, that rationale applies basically anywhere in the body. Certainly, there are certain situations where that will be more valuable than others. But, you know, each one of the sites you mentioned are absolutely candidates for this kind of treatment. Now, the trick, of course, is actually having data that demonstrates it, right? So a lot of people will want to say, well, you know, to apply proton beam to kind of every tumor in the body, which we can come up with a theoretic rationale to do so, insurers and other physicians will want data to prove it, which, of course, takes quite a lot of time to develop. You know, as I mentioned, in the case of breast cancer, we initiated that in 2004. So that takes a lot of manpower. You know, back a decade ago, there were very few centers around, so producing data was slow. Today, with there being more centers and more patient access to it, data is, of course, more forthcoming. And there are studies coming from our center and many others that are coming out much more frequently now. So that's all work that is currently happening.
Doctor, what has been the success rate of using proton beam to treat breast cancer?
That can be a tricky question to answer because people define success in a lot of different ways. The most frequent circumstance we use radiation for breast cancer is to prevent a recurrence in the breast, right? That is the kind of primary endpoint for radiation. That's what we're trying to do. So in the study that we completed and reported on, we selected patients who had earlier stage disease. So it's important to recognize, you know, any number we might throw at always applies to a selected group of patients. In the patients that qualified for our treatment, the outcomes that we saw in terms of breast cancer recurrence out at 5 years, meaning 5 years from treatment, 97% of patients did not have any recurrence in the breast, which if you go out and compare that to other studies looking at similar populations, that's a good number. You know, whenever you're in the upper 90% of anything with cancer, that's a number to kind of hang on to. So in that respect, the results were quite good. But, you know, really the goal of the trial was to show that we could do this with less toxicity and less side effects and less damage to the breast, so to speak. So those are other endpoints that we feel were just as important as the survival endpoint.
Your point about less toxicity, it's less risky. What is the treatment time? I know that I interviewed one of your specialists there on prostate cancer, and it was like a 9-week regimen, 5 treatments a week. What about breast cancer, the time involved? And you just said it's less risky, there's less toxicity in comparison to, let's say, something like chemotherapy.
Right. So for radiation treatment, you know, in terms of number of treatments that we choose to deliver, I mean, the range goes all the way from one single treatment all the way up to, like in prostate cancer, you know, like a 9-week daily treatment, including all sorts of variations in between. So for the case of breast cancer, since we were electing only to treat the area where the tumor originated at, meaning just the portion of the breast. So we were not treating the entire breast. We were treating a portion of the breast where the tumor originated from. And when we were doing that treatment with proton beam, since we were eliminating exposure to the heart and the lung and the ribs, the need to do these more protracted fractionation schedules really aren't needed. So it allows you to kind of explore using these much shorter treatment schedules in our case, we chose to do a 2-week schedule, meaning they got one treatment per day over 10 treatments over a 2-week course. So that was just a decision that we made, and that was the program we decided on back in 2004, and we still use it today.
Doctor, what is the acceptance of this kind of treatment? Is it covered, for example, by Medicare or, let's say, most general insurance? Because I know sometimes proton beam can be more expensive. I know in the treatment of prostate cancer, it's a little bit more expensive, and sometimes some insurance companies will not cover it.
That's true. You know, we run into that when there are private insurers primarily. Medicare doesn't really distinguish the method or type of radiation. So for patients with that type of insurance, there are usually few problems. Private insurances do, however, as you mentioned, because of some increased cost, you know, try to limit its use for obvious reasons on their part. So we do run into that with breast cancer. You know, even though we have good data to support its use, there are some insurers that won't cover it, which is actually interesting because, you know, if you do standard radiation for breast cancer, that is typically a 6-week treatment. If you compare that to a 2-week treatment with proton beam, actually the cost of proton is quite competitive and in some cases even less expensive than 6 weeks of standard treatment like IMRT. And there was a study done by the Boston group that actually demonstrates this. But it can be a struggle to get private insurers on board with the idea.
Doctor, let's say for the women that are listening to this program that are out there, let's say they've been diagnosed with early stage breast cancer. Should they want to consider proton beam radiation? Is this something they should be discussing with their surgeon, their general doctor? How does this all work in conjunction with, let's say, surgery?
So if a woman with breast cancer, you know, newly diagnosed is interested in perhaps receiving proton therapy, the best thing to do is to contact a treatment center because each treatment center kind of has different criteria of how they would manage a case like this, ours being the same. And there are certain aspects to surgery that have to be done a particular way such that proton radiation can be an option. Primarily, that includes the placement of some fiducial markers around the area where the tumor was removed from so that we can accurately localize the area after the surgery. That kind of information can be given to patients up front, but usually I think the best step is to contact a proton treatment center.
And then maybe once that contact is made, then let's say that center would then work with the surgeons. So the surgeons, as you mentioned, if they're removing the tumor, they have to leave some kind of markers so you can dial in the area that needs to be treated. So I assume that you have a good relationship with the surgeons and those performing the surgery understand what's needed to be done.
Exactly. So, you know, we've done that many times. You know, some surgeons will place these markers as a routine procedure, but not all of them do. But there just would need to be an understanding that that is kind of a necessary step if there's going to be proton treatment used afterwards. So it's usually a pretty simple matter. The surgeon would just need to be aware. Those aren't special devices. Those are kind of standard devices, these markers.
Doctor, if our listeners would like to find out more about proton beam radiation and the treatment of breast cancer, are there studies or are there places that they can go to read up and find out more about the results or the treatment itself?
Sure. You know, the type of information such as, you know, we've published out of our institution, you know, this is published in medical journals. And of course, these things are kind of written for the medical community. So patients or lay people may not completely understand it all, but there is information on websites. I think each proton center has its own website that is kind of geared more for patients. I think those can be very helpful. We have a good one from our center, but all centers have them. But those are really today the main way to get that information.
I know that in the area of prostate cancer, one of your patients, Bob Marchini, has written a book on how you can beat prostate cancer without surgery. Anybody written something similar for women to read, or are you aware of any books out there that can explain the different forms of treatment, their success rate?
Boy, one that is analogous to Marchini's book, not that I'm aware of. You know, I think the concept in prostate cancer is, of course, a little bit of a different one where your patients really have to choose between two very different treatment methods, you know, surgery or radiation. So I'm not aware of it for breast cancer. Of course, the circumstances are a little different in that situation. Patients would still be getting surgery, but there would kind of be a choice between standard radiation or proton radiation. But no, the short answer to your question is no, I'm not aware of a comparable book for breast cancer.
In summing up, assuming that, let's say, somebody's been diagnosed with breast cancer and they're considering proton beam radiation, one of the best forms of finding out information is go to an organization that offers proton beam radiation. I know Scripps Clinic has just built a proton beam center here in San Diego, or a center like yourself's, Loma Linda, would be the best way to get more information?
I think so. You know, the thing, I guess, to remember is not all centers kind of specialize in the same types of treatment, such as at our center, you know, we've got over a decade of experience in breast cancer, but not all newer centers have treated breast cancer in the same way. So it takes a little bit of research to find some of that out, but certainly that would be a good start.
Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. We've been speaking with Dr. David Bush. He's Vice President and Chairman of the Department of Radiation at Loma Linda University Medical Center. If you are looking for places to get information on the treatment of breast cancer with proton beam, Loma Linda is certainly one source. Doctor, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure.
You know, it's interesting, Jim. This seems to be opening up a whole new door because a friend of mine at church was announced to me, oh, this must have been about 9 months ago, that he was going to have his prostate removed because he had prostate cancer. And in my typical tactful way, I said, whoa, time out. have you looked at proton beam therapy like that? And he looks at me like, well, what's that? Is this akin to tin hat stuff? His wife was really worried about that, because when you get into cancer, you immediately have this onrush of all sorts of people recommending, you know, all sorts of cures. And I said, well, no, you need to talk to another friend of mine who just went through this, because it was a very good alternative. And he did that. And as a result of that, he went to Loma Linda and had the treatment. And since then, he's been cancer-free. I mean, things, his PSAT levels came down and everything else. So this whole new therapy is a new way to go. As I've said, the way they're really going to ultimately knock cancer out is when they learn to use various markers, genetic or otherwise, that specifically ID only cancer cells. Then it will not care where it is in the body. You'll be able to go and get it.
And that seems to be where we're going with, especially some of the biotech firms are moving in that direction. But at least the advancement of treatment of cancer has come a long, long way from where it was, let's say, 20, 30 years ago. And even the survival rates, I was just reading and doing some research for this interview, that the survival rates for breast cancer has gone up. And a lot of it had to do with some studies on hormone therapy, the reduction of that. So who knows where we're going to be going here in the next 20, 15 years. But, you know, one of the key things here is regular checkups with your doctor and not allowing the disease to progress. And two of my favorite authors, John, Tom Clancy and Vince Flynn, wrote geopolitical novels. Vince Flynn dying of prostate cancer at age 44. And when he was writing his last couple of books, he had a hard time sitting down in a chair because of the pain. And unfortunately, by the time he decided to do something about it, it was too late stage. Likewise with Tom Clancy, both authors dying of prostate cancer within 6 weeks of each other. So the key is early detection.
No, we know it was a government hit. You know that. They didn't like what these guys were writing about.
Yeah, they didn't like the books, and so somebody from NSA got to them. Okay. Well, anyway, we've run out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.